Well, once again, I welcome you here to the boarding area for our time machine, and I'm borrowing Jules Verne's time machine. I hope we can all fit in and just make sure we press the right button to get back there. So remember, we're going to be going back to the about 1400 BC, so we have to push the right button. And again, before we get started, I want to read Psalm 119, and this time it's going to be the fourth stanza. And I took a lesson from Pastor Cox last week. My eyes are not very good. So please don't be embarrassed or shame me for reading from my tablet, because then I can make the print as big as I can want it, and it's easy for me. You know, I'm not squinting and crying because I can't see. But so, and I've also printed out the verses that I want to read, so I can thank Pastor Cox for giving me that suggestion. And for my wife, who said, why don't you do what Pastor Cox does so that you don't hurt your eyes? So let me read from Psalm 119, the fourth stanza. My soul clings to the dust. Give me life according to your word. When I told of my ways, you answered me. Teach me your statutes. Make me understand the ways of your precepts, and I will meditate on your wondrous works. My soul melts away for sorrow. Strengthen me according to your word. Put false ways far from me, and graciously teach me your law. I have chosen the way of faithfulness. I set your rules before me. I cling to your testimonies, O Lord. Let me not be put to shame. I will run in the way of your commandments when you enlarge my heart. So let's kind of do some review from last week. We managed only to get through verse 18 of chapter 1. And I really spent a lot of time on the command to journey forth because of the land. Remember, they were told that they stayed long enough and there's time to cross the boundary, time to get into a new phase. And it was going to take them 1 year to get from Mount Sinai to Kadesh Barnea. Remember, there were three parts to the Abrahamic covenant. There was the people, the blessing, and the land. We've seen the people. Now, I have to make a correction. Last week, I said there were 70 people going into Egypt. There was really 67, and there were three already there. So that made 70 in Egypt. So Carol caught me on that one. So the blessing of the people went from 70 to where we're talking now about 2 million people. So that's already been accomplished. Now, Moses blessed the people and asked to increase that number by 1,000. So now we're talking just about the land. The land was good agriculturally, but it was made even better because it was being given to the people by God. Now, that was the land in which they were going to settle. And they were going to live in harmony with God. They were going to follow his commandments. They were going to be able to be a blessing in that land. And they were going to be blessed in that land. But do you remember what the key word? There was a condition. Do you remember what that was? Obedience. They had all those privileges, but they had to be obedient. And by being obedient, that's where we're going to be going through go back over the Ten Commandments and go back over all the case law studies that they had to deal with. Now, what right did God have to give them the land? He owns everything. So he can give the land to anyone he pleases. And we're going to see in here, if we get there, that he has given the land to other people. But if you remember, a few weeks ago I said, there's something different about the land he gave Israel than the land he's going to give the other people. And we'll get there, I hope, this time, and we can talk about that. So this is what we're going to get through today. Now, if I can't get through chapter 2, verses 1 through 15, I'm not even going to start, because it's too important for me to get started in here, and there's no easy place to make the break. So if I don't get there, you might get an early break for your goodies. Oh, let me go back one. Excuse me. We talked about the incapacity of Moses, and that is they had 2 million people that he now had to deal with that he couldn't handle by himself. And with that 2 million people, they recommended that judges be formed so that they could break it up and have smaller groups of people that he could talk to. And then lastly was the instructions. They would hear the cases. Now, there was something different about these judges. They not only heard cases between brother Israelites, but also between Israelites and aliens. So there is the equal treatment that Moses was giving to the people. There wasn't any discrimination between the Israelis and the aliens. They were to also get a fair hearing before the court. And they were not to be intimidated. Now, later on, when we get into later chapters of Deuteronomy, that's to be taken seriously. There's a consequence later on that we'll read about, that if you mess around with the judges, you're going to be in big trouble. Now, the judgments that were given were really judgments given by God. And so that's why they were so important. They weren't just merely being done by a person, but they were God's judgment. Do you remember what that special assignment were about the judges that were given in Numbers 25:5? When they had the problem with the interrelationship between the Israelites and the Canaanites, I believe, the judges were ordered to slaughter the Israelites that performed those interactions with them. So they had a special job at that particular time. And as I said, this is where I hope to get through today. So let me read then these verses from Deuteronomy. This is starting with verse 19. Then we set out from Horeb and went through all that great and terrifying wilderness that you saw on the way to the hill country of the Amorites, as the Lord our God commanded us. We came to Kadesh Barnea, and I said to you, you have come to the hill country of the Amorites, which the Lord our God is giving us. See, the Lord your God has set the land before you. Go up, take possession, as the Lord the God of your fathers has told you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Then all of you came near to me and said, let us send men before us that they may explore the land for us and bring us word again by the way which we must go up and the cities into which we shall come. The thing seemed good to me, and I took 12 men from you, one man from each tribe. And they turned and went into the hill country and came to the valley of Eshcol and spied it out. And they took in their hands some of the fruit of the land and brought it down to us and brought us word again and said, it is good land that the Lord your God is giving us. Now again, all these verses are in the past tense because Moses is just reviewing what has already happened. And if you think about, why is he spending all this time reviewing? Well, he's spending all this time reviewing, trying to get the people to remember, don't make the same mistake again. And that's what he's trying to do. Moses makes it clear that it was going to be a very difficult journey, and it was, to get from Sinai to Kadesh Barnea. Remember, he was given the command, go up, take possession. That was not a mere suggestion. That was a command to go forth and do it. There wasn't any option. And remember, this whole treaty that was being done, covenant treaty being done between Yahweh and Israel, was not a negotiated treatment. Yahweh set it down as to what it was going to be, and the people back at Sinai agreed. So there's no negotiations. Yahweh is the great king, Israel is the vassal. And we have to keep that in mind because there's going to be constant reference back to that. And you remember he talked about the God of your fathers. So he's reminding the people about the promise of the land to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's the land. And remember, I said I didn't use these words last time and I was about the Clinton Bush. It's the economy, stupid. It's the economy. In this particular case, it's the land, baby. It's the land. And that's what we have to be keeping in mind, that it's the land that he's talking about. And somebody reminded me last week that Premier Netanyahu said to somebody when asked, he said, this is the land that was promised by God to Abraham. And I got to thinking, suppose somebody who was a Hamas supporter said to you, what right do the Israel have to that land? And you were to say to them, God promised it to Abraham. What do you think they would say to you? They'd look at us like we were idiots because they couldn't conceive of God making a promise. In fact, most of them can't even consider the concept of God, but figuring that out, that God would promise the land thousands of years ago, and he fulfilled that promise. That kind of ran through my mind last week after somebody talked about that to me. The people obviously didn't trust God. God said, go take possession. That wasn't going to be like it wasn't going to happen. It was going to happen. But what did they say? Oh, they said, let's send spies, scouts into the land in order to see what our things are like. They did it. Now, if you go back to Numbers, it's going to sound like God commanded it. Here in Deuteronomy, you're going to hear that it's the people came. And that's not a conflict. It's just that Moses is not repeating word for word what he said in Numbers here in Deuteronomy. John MacArthur gave a suggestion out of how this might have happened, was that the people came to Moses. Moses took the request to God. God then commanded Moses to send out the spies. So anyway, that's kind of what it might be. Now, you know, that might be a good idea from our point of view. It's a good idea, send out spies and scouts. We did it in the Old West, if you remember. You do it in the military whenever it seems possible to get the lay of the land. But God had already provided them that they were going to win. So from our point of view, it makes good sense. But from the Israelis, from their point of view, it didn't really make much sense because God had already promised them the victory. One member was chosen from each tribe, and 12 were sent out. And so to get a better understanding of what is going on here, let me go back to the Numbers version, chapter 13, verses 17 through 27. When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, "Go up through the Negev and into the hill country. See what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees in it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. It is the season for first ripe grapes. Now, this is a translation from the NIV. So they went up and explored the land from the desert of Zin as far as Rehob toward Lebo Hamath. They went up through the Negev, came to Hebron, where Aman and Sheshai and Tamai, the descendants of Anak, lived. Hebron has been built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. The place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them, to the whole assembly, and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses the account. "We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit." So everything's looking good. Now for the next verses, 26 through 33. "Yet you would not go up, but rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. And you murmured in your tents and said, 'Because the Lord hated us, he has brought us out of the land of Egypt to give us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us.' Where are we going? Where are we going up? Our brothers have made our hearts melt, saying, 'The people are greater and taller than we. The cities are great and fortified up to heaven. And besides, we have seen the sons of Amakin there.' Then I said to you, 'Do not be in dread or afraid of them. The Lord your God who goes before you will himself fight for you, just as he did in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness where you have seen the Lord your God carried you, a man as a man carries his son, all the way that you went until you came to this place. Yet in spite of this word, you did not believe the Lord your God, who went up before you in a way to seek you out a place to pitch your tents in fire by night and in the cloud by day to show you by what way you should go. The people refused to go, even though they showed you a good set of fruit. So let me read to you this account in Numbers 28 through 33 in the NIV translation. "But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We saw descendants of Anak there. And the Amalekites live in the Negev, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites lived near the sea along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, 'We should go up and take possession of the land, for we certainly can do it.' But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are,' and they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they explored. They said, 'The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak, who came from Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. So we had 10 of them say, don't go. 2 said, go. Now, one of the things we saw there was the fortified cities, and did some reading about that, and there's a possible reason for the fortification of the cities. To the north of Canaan was a rather deserty area. Canaan, we know, is very fertile from the size of the grapes. So the land that was up in the north, when there was a drought, was not producing much food. But Canaan still was able to produce the food. So the people from the north would come into the land and attack those cities trying to get the food. Because they were nomadic or semi-nomadic, they didn't really have many places to go for food, so they would come down south. So that was one reason why there was fortifications. Also, archaeology has found that in the periods from the 1200 to 1500 BC, in the Bronze area, in the Bronze era, they have found physical evidence of fortified cities. So we now there's archaeological proof of the fortification, which then the Bible has already told us that, but it took the archaeologists to prove that. So to people. So we have physical evidence of the fortified cities, and then we have perhaps a reason for the fortification of the cities. Now, the people were afraid to go in. They saw what God did going through the plagues in Egypt, going through the Red Sea, the convention at Sinai, the trip from Sinai to Kadesh Barnea. Although God took them all that way, provided for them, but now they doubted. And I got to thinking this morning, you know, maybe what they thought was like people talk about the stock market today. Future benefits do not depend upon past performance. So maybe they were thinking, well, he did that in the past. How do I know that he's going to do it into the future? They didn't have the faith to believe that what God promised to give them the land, that he actually could do it. And so they were fearful. And I got to thinking, you know, I get convicted that way. Do I always 100% trust God, or do I want to do it my way, as Frank Sinatra would say? There, if you remember Frank Sinatra, the young people can go back to the oldies. And so sometimes I like to put myself in the position of those people to wonder, what would I have done in that same thing, same with the face condition? And so it gets difficult. Remember the treaty. Remember the treaty. God told them to go in and conquer the land. They said no. They rebelled against the great king. When you rebel against the great king, there's a punishment. And we're going to be reading about that punishment. Now, the question that they asked in verse, in the ESV, where are we going up? The NIV translates it a little bit better. Where are we to go? The New Living Translation, I think, does it even better. Where can we go? Should they go up against the Amorites or the people in Canaan? Or, as they asked back in Numbers 14:4, should we go back to Egypt? They still weren't willing to commit themselves to go into the land. And again, at the end of those verses, Moses reminded the people, do not be afraid, that Yahweh was actually going to do the fighting. He was going to physically use the Israelites, but Yahweh was in command, and what he says goes. Had they gone in, they would have won, but they still just didn't trust him. And if you look at verse 31, there's a discussion there between the father carrying the son. And this, again, is terminology of the ancient Near East treaties, where the father is considered to be the great king, in this case, Yahweh, and the son will be Israel, the vassal. Now, do you ever stop and think there's no message here about the judges? You would have thought that the judges at this point that he appointed some time ago would have been there to support Moses and Caleb and Joshua, but there's no mention of them. In other words, we're not told, so we don't know if the judges spoke up or not. It's just that they weren't. We don't know anything about that. Now we come up to the judgment from verses 34 through 40. And the Lord heard your words and was angered, and he swore, not one of these men of this evil generation shall see the good land that I swore to give your fathers, except Caleb, the son of Caleb. He shall see it to him who, and to him and to his children I will give the land on which he has trodden, because he was wholly followed the Lord. Even with me, the Lord was angry on your account, and said, you also shall not go in there. Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall enter. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it. And as for you, your little ones, who you said would become prey, and your children who today have no knowledge of good or evil, they shall go in there, and to them I will give it, and they shall possess it. But as for you, turn and journey into the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea. Now, we're told there that God is angry with the Israelites because, again, they disobeyed. And when they disobey, they violated the treaty. And now you have heard their punishment. They will not go in there. And let me read their punishment in Numbers 26 through 35 in Numbers. And this, again, this is in the ESV translation. And the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, how long shall this wicked congregation grumble before me? I have heard the grumblings of the people of Israel, which they grumble against me. Say to them, as I live, declares the Lord, what you have said in my hearing, I will do to you. Your dead body shall fall in the wilderness, and all your number listed in the census from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. No one shall come into the land where I swore that I would make you dwell, except Caleb and Joshua, the son of Nun. But your little ones, who you said would become prey, I will bring in, and they shall know the land that you have rejected. But as for you, your dead bodies shall fall in the wilderness, and your children will be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years, and shall suffer for your faithlessness, until the last of your dead bodies lie in the wilderness. According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, a year for each day you shall bear your iniquity, 40 years, and you shall know my displeasure. I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely this I will do to all the wicked congregation who gathered together against me in this wilderness. They shall come to a full end, and there they shall die. So we know that two people are going to make it. That's Caleb and Joshua. Caleb will get the land. Joshua will lead the people into the promised land. It's always bothered me that poor Moses, suffered all this, and instead of speaking to the rock, he hits it. Now, I don't know about you folks, but to me that didn't seem like a really bad thing. I mean, he hit other rocks and water came out. So I was always wrestling with this until I read my friend John MacArthur's note on this. And let me read to you so I don't mess it up completely. John MacArthur makes an analogy between Israel's disobedience some 39 years ago at Kadesh Barnea and Moses' disobedience of striking the rock rather than speaking to it. Both Moses and Israel failed to honor the word of God. Thus, Moses, by striking the rock, suffered the same punishment. He was not allowed to enter the promised land. And in verse 40, they were told to break up. Let me read that. But as for you, turn and journey into the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea. So they're leaving Kadesh Barnea. In a sense, they're leaving it. But remember, they have herds and flocks. Kadesh Barnea is an oasis. They need the water. So rather than be wandering aimlessly in the desert, we have talked about them going, finding grazing land in the area and coming back to Kadesh Barnea for the water. Out and back, out and back. Wandering, looking for pasture lands in and around Kadesh Barnea. So they were going to stay there something like 38 or 39 years, doing just that. And I'm not even going to make it to the next part. Let me end up with prayer. Dear God, we thank you for this day, and we thank you for the words that you have provided for us, especially in this book of Deuteronomy, which was quoted much by Jesus and much by the New Testament people. This is the book of the ending and the beginning, the end of their journey into the beginning of the book into the promised land, and it's the end of the book where they're getting ready to go into the promised land. And we know someday we'll enter into the promised land. Into your hands we give ourselves. We ask all of this in the name of your Son, our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.